Thank you so much for the privilege of being here and being able to present on a topic we're very passionate about on our team. It's basically about how do we develop short-term medical experiences for long-term impact. So I'm really excited about what the previous presenters presented, and I think we can use a lot of that stuff in our work as well. But how do we want to share a global health education program for community-based primary healthcare in Nicaragua. And this is actually a collaborative thing that we've been doing in Nicaragua, so I really am grateful for all the community health workers, our staff, our volunteers, our students who have been working on this project, and also all the rest of our abstract presenters, two of whom who are here. They're actually our community health program managers, Anna Williams and Dr. Roberto Martinez, and also Christina Parajon, who is also one of our facilitators and preceptors for the program. So I have nothing to disclose, thankfully. So according to an article, recent article by Michael Merchant of the Duke Global Health Institute, there's been a tenfold growth in global health programs since 2001. So many of our presenters referred to that. This huge increase, and this is just for like formal global health programs. There's so many more other like non-formal global health programs that are going on. And so, you know, the increase of this amount of people interested in global health, according to Merson, is a reflection of student interest in reducing health disparities, but also the universities and people responding to the market of like students wanting to increase global health, decrease global health disparities, which is awesome. We are so excited about that piece of it. There are so many people in global health excited. When I was a student, there were not that many people interested in global health, but now all of a sudden, like all of the presenters said, there's an explosion of that. And I think our reality is that, okay, this is great. There's a potential for amazing global health work to be going on, but there's also a reality that the people who are coming or the sending agencies are usually high-income countries, and those of us who are receiving, on the receiving end of these programs, are usually low-income countries. So, you know, is it possible that many well-intentioned programs can actually exacerbate power differences and health inequities between those who have and those who have not, using, you know, these short-term education programs and this exodus of students who want to come and learn about global health? But, you know, us as host agencies, we're having to do orientation, we're trying to figure out how to place all these students, how to not affect the communities themselves, but actually to help them. So our challenge in global health really has been, how do you give students the opportunity and learn to learn and practice global public health skills instead of actually exacerbating the very inequalities you wish to address? And this can happen, and there's a lot of articles that have been talking about this lately, as you have referred to. What I'm going to do to share this in this presentation is really share some background about our program as a community-based primary health care program, of how we're trying to remain true to our work, which is doing community-based work in rural communities long-term, but also how we've been able to try to address, like critically address, try to think about how to really use this excitement that students have to really make an impact using an educational methodology for global health education, how we've been thoughtfully trying to integrate short-term volunteers with long-term community-based primary health care, and what's actually the operations required to do this kind of global health education. So a little bit of background on our mission. For ourselves in Nicaragua since 2001, my husband and I have been medical missionaries in Nicaragua doing community-based global health care. We're super passionate about social justice approaches to assuring that every single person gets treated in these rural communities. We work alongside communities in health, education, and development. Our main issue is health inequities. And can I ask you guys a question? Why is it that we can have an iPod docking station that can actually deliver toilet paper and a printout 3D heart that you can do, but yet we are still unable to address the problem that 6 million children every year still die of completely preventable and treatable illnesses, that people still don't have enough food to eat, and that children are malnourished and therefore they're dying? You know, why is that? So our issue is that let's try to do something about it. We use a well-known strategy, which is community-based primary health care. Who knows about Alma Ata 1978? Yes, health for all. Okay, this is awesome. So this strategy came out of the health for all, which is basically, it's a complex problem of trying to reach out to the people who need it most in very remote communities. And we use community empowerment as a strategy, intersectoral collaboration with partnership with many different groups, and then also, wow, I don't know what happened to that slide, but but also doing evidence-based interventions. Something happened to that slide. At any rate, we work in remote rural communities, and we do community-based work, not facility-based work. And the reason why we do this is that much of the literature shows that the facilities do really good care, but oftentimes those who are around the community do not receive care. So how do we get out to the most remote people? We work in 4 departments in Nicaragua, so I was interested in seeing that that was one of your review literature articles. We focus on the most vulnerable people, working with community health workers to use a census-based, impact-oriented, community-based primary health care methodology. It means that we census every single person in our catchment area, but we don't do this. We do this alongside community health workers, so they know every single newborn, every single children under 2, pregnant women, youth, chronically ill, so that they can assure that those people are taken care of. Here's some of the tools that the community health workers use. We use community mapping, and then because you can have organized community health workers and train them, they can actually do evidence-based interventions like pregnancy plan, integrated management of childhood illness. And Nicaragua actually has so many good policies that sometimes don't get to the level of communities, right? So we do have protocols. Pan American Health Organization, World Health Organization has amazing protocols, but often they don't get to the people who need it the most. So what we do is that we work alongside people. We don't work on them or for them, but actually with them and alongside them. So this is the work that Anna and, you know, Dr. Anna and Dr. Roberto do all the time with our huge team of people who work, community health workers in the communities. So what happened to us in the summers when we got this exodus of students who wanted to come and work in community health and volunteer? So here are all our students. We first started out with a few students, and then, wow, look what happened to us every year. The more years we were on the field, the more students wanted to have global health experiences. And if you look at the point in 2002, that was when we had 29 students over the summer, it almost shut us down. And you can talk to Dr. Tonio afterwards about this, but we were like, oh my gosh, we either have to shut down this volunteer program or ramp it up to the new level. So as a team, we talked about it. We had to face this challenging decision about this problem that we saw, and then as you can see, that kept on growing after that, was that how were we going to address this issue of the balance of, you know, short-term people wanting to come down to do long-term health work, but they were actually really just short-term. And so what we did was we said to ourselves, you know what, we have something to share. You know, we are really concerned about not just of the what we do, like evidence-based interventions. That's awesome. We all know about that. That's in everybody's curriculum. Oral rehydration for diarrhea, integrated management childhood illnesses for pneumonia. But the how we do it, it's so exciting to see that you have added cultural humility to your education. But how do we listen to communities? You know, that's just as important. How do we actually collaborate with communities? And how do we actually work together and pull in all the partners to actually make a difference? So those were the kind of things that we thought, well, maybe we could share that. And so we developed a global health practicum as a result of this, you know, little powwow we had with our community staff and figuring out what to do with our volunteers. And so we developed a 3-week global health practicum that's the 2 weeks of in-class learning with 1 week of field exposure and then 6 weeks of field work in specific things that our communities were already doing. So what happened was that volunteers would come or students and they'd be like, I'm really interested in diarrhea rates and I want to do a study on that. Or I'm really interested in, I don't know, figuring out what short-term mission teams do to you guys, you know, something like that. But you know what, that was just impossible. You know, students need to be mentored, they need to be supported and orientated. We just didn't have the staff for that. So we just limited students to say, We have 3 internships, and that they're in things that we're already doing: women's empowerment, youth empowerment, community health workers, and clean water. And then they would funnel into that. So we developed some really key global health topics that I saw in your presentations as well. You know, community-based primary health care, community health worker strategies, Ama Ada and Health for All, social and economic determinants of health in Nicaraguan context, so that during the 1 week field classroom experience, they would be interfacing with this. And we use the popular education methodology, so it's very interactive. We also did core competencies, so they would get exposure to community-based participatory research, not actually come, you know, oh my gosh, we have so many students who are like, I want to write a paper to publish or present at APHA. Like, cool, okay, but, you know, let's think about working with the community on that first. Community empowerment strategies, application of community-based primary healthcare principles, and then learning project-specific core competencies in the projects that they were going to do that summer, like nutrition screening, how to supervise water filters, how to work with youth empowerment and student empowerment curriculums. So what we did was we combined the knowledge with the competencies. But the most important thing that we feel is the part in the middle, where we were really helping students to think about how do we approach communities in a humble manner, how do we think always about global health equity, who are we missing out in the conversation, and power and privilege, like where are we coming from and how do we start talking about issues of power and privilege, because as a white person or an Asian person or someone coming with more education to the community, you automatically are in positions of power and privilege, and how does that affect how you relate to a community and collaborate? So the kind of way we get to this is through transformative education. Can I ask you a question? Can you raise your hand if you're familiar with the work of Paulo Freire, the Brazilian educator? Yes, this is so awesome. Usually no one knows. This is amazing. So that's why APHA is amazing. So anyways, we use the work of Paulo Freire. He's a Brazilian educator who really was questioning the status quo. We want our students to not just receive banking education, which, you know what, that's what I mostly received in medical school, you know? And you have to know those things in medical school. I mean, you do need banking education, but you also need transformative education. Why are we learning the things we learn? Why are we doing the things we do? There's Dr. Tomo. So the key principle that we work with is dialogue. So it's like self-reflection, listening, taking action, and it's actually a methodology that Paulo Freire calls praxis. Listen to the communities or listen to whatever the issues are, reflect on them, and take action together. And it's an iterative process. So we're trying to teach our students that, like, you know what, we don't have all the answers in global health. But, like, you know, you did a lit search, so you're, like, listening, you're figuring this out, and then you're going to take action and always trying to improve the health care and equity of the people you serve. One of the things we do is this little topic, this little, we use, like, participatory methodologies to talk about the issues of power and privilege and use critical theory questions. So we show pictures like this and have the students look for pictures like this as well. And ask, what's happening beneath the surface? Like, who has the power and who doesn't? Who's benefiting and who is being marginalized? And this is so important, I think, in our global health world, because I think those of us who live in Nicaragua see this every day. Some donor comes and they want to just do malaria mosquito nets, and that's all we're going to do. And we take away money from, like, the community-based work that the Ministry of Health is doing because we're going to, like, distribute mosquito nets and we're going to do deworming medicine. So who's really benefiting and who has the power to decide that we're going to do mosquito nets and malaria issues when they don't even have an ambulance to get out to, like, you know, get the people that they need? Or they do have protocols, but they don't have the staff to actually train all their staff in the protocols that they need to do. So really asking those questions about who determines the global health issues. We do a lot of simulation-based learning, so that was awesome to see your simulation-based learning. We have these cool simulations that actually, and one of our students actually said something that was amazing. We have a simulation where people simulate, like, what it's like in like Nicaragua, for instance, like the very wealthy never see the poorest people. And it was like a simulation they did for 2 hours. And one of our students said, you know, I thought that was just a simulation. I was like, yeah, rich people don't usually see poor people. But then she's like, then I got to the rural communities and I actually saw that. Like, none of the people actually, in the wealthy people in power, never see that, how the people live in these rural communities. And so now she's like saying, now this is what she wants to do in the States, right? Use what she's learned to address health inequities and disparities. So we have a series of different kinds of simulation-based learning. For instance, we have one where there's two communities. One community has food, one community doesn't. You have a certain amount of limited resources. What are you going to do to improve malnutrition? You know, are you going to go food as medicine? But you also have to buy medicine for the communities too. So, like, having students really think about the complexities of global health and what does it mean to really engage in global health. We also have a lot of global health case studies that they interface with. So for instance, like, you have a health promoter who's doing, has to visit every single health worker, every single child to make sure that, you know, the vulnerable children don't die. But guess what? A big mission team comes from the States. Like, and they love it when people come from the States. They bring all these goodies, they bring a bunch of medicine. So instead of doing that, he decides to go and be with this group, right? So, like, wow, that's a really tough case to try to think of. And so we really try to help students go work through this. The key thing that we're trying to do with the students is, like, you know, to start deconstructing their own realities. So to understand another person's reality, we must learn to critically analyze our own. And I think that's such an important piece in global health, is for us to be humble, to think, yeah, we don't know all the answers, let's listen, and that takes time. Let's listen to the communities, let's really work with them, and let's figure out a way to do this all together and bring in different resources to actually serve the long-term issues of, you know, just basic access to healthcare, to food, to medicine. So the way we do this, we have the three-week practicum, and we do this because what was happening was that the students would be coming in and doing things that weren't, like, necessarily helpful in the community. And so we had them, had our team, so actually our team really worked hard to see how can we actually use all this energy of the students to integrate with long-term community-based primary health care. And so this was the 6 weeks of field work. And I just want to share with you some of the things that they did. So who knows the protocol Central Care for Every Baby and Helping Babies Breathe? Raise your hand. Okay. That's from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it's a protocol that's actually based off a Ministry of Health protocol on helping babies breathe and essential care for every baby. So one of the things that was really cool was that our team worked with the Ministry of Health to actually assure that all the protocols of the Ministry of Health fit in with the essential care for every baby. And our students did the most awesome thing. So they worked with the women in the communities we serve. And American Academy of Pediatrics has a whole series of essential care for every baby in every language. But you know what? They didn't have it in Latin America pictures. And that was one of the issues that the government health center was like, why do we have to have the Africa faces on our flip charts, you know? So one of our students here, our research assistant, Christina, actually photoshopped them all to look Latin. And that really actually helped the communities. And those are things students can do. They're good at that. Like, we're not good at that, but definitely students are. Another thing is that the American Academy of Pediatrics had pictures that were actually developed from Africa. So, you know, in Africa, they were putting mud and leaves on the umbilical cord, and our people were like, we don't do that. We put something else on, but not that. So then, and they actually, the mothers actually said, why don't we put something positive on there and tell people, like, what we could do, so when we go to the mom's houses, we can teach them about, you know, taking care of the umbilical cord. So really, like, the students actually engaging that, and so they're like, for 1 week, 2 weeks, they're just working with the moms and trying to determine what's the best way they could learn and teach other moms. And they realized that it's hard work, right? So this is, like, the pictures that they had, which was the African mom with all the things that they do in Africa, and then they're like, oh, well, they talked to the moms and found out they were still using bottles, but instead of honey, they were giving baby porridge when they were, you know, newborns, and also giving them tea. So they put those things as the things not to address and, you know, doing the baby care. Also, the Youth Empowerment Internship worked on our Teen Smart curriculum, which is a curriculum for youth. So they really worked alongside the youth and did a project called Photo Voice to actually determine from the kids' points of view. They took photos about what were the issues most important to them and then worked with them to develop a health committee of youth to then work, who would be working on health issues of importance to them. So that's kind of like a cool way that students start seeing, oh yeah, you know, if we listen to the communities, we can actually make a huge difference. We also have a water sanitation internship, and so they did water testing with the community members themselves. They, you know, developed like little hand washing materials with the communities, and then they actually helped the communities themselves analyze the data. So you know what, students are really good at collecting data and looking at stuff, and the communities are really good at analyzing the data. So it's like bringing the best strength of each people to the table, always in a way of listening, reflecting, and taking action. So what has been the impact of this project? We're really glad we didn't table our volunteer program and student program, because there's been a lot of impact over the years. So our students have contributed to the Essential Care for Every Baby program, to our WASH programs, to all the different programs we do currently. The communities have seen an impact as well. A lot of them have actually gotten data and new educational materials out of it. And then as an organization, they've helped us a lot, you know, developing materials, helping with research, helping with a lot of things that actually push the community-based primary healthcare agenda forward of how do we reduce health inequities. So just to finish up, this required a lot of operations. It is possible to blend short-term missions with long-term community-based primary health care, and so that's why there's a thumbs up, but it does take a lot of work. In order for us to actually have done this program, we required program operations. So we had to screen and place students. We work closely with the universities that work with us, so we work with like OSU, Wake Forest, Brown, different universities that we coordinate with. We work with safety issues, logistical support, curriculum development, internship development, and making sure it integrates with our long-term program, as well as preceptor development. So here we have Desiree and Alberto. They're our volunteer coordinators. We actually have to pay them so that they can be doing all this stuff during the year. We also have our global health fellows, Andre and Kiara, who actually are working on updating curriculum. So just like our other presenter was saying, like, yeah, you have to update this stuff all the time because things are changing. In addition, we have volunteer facilitators. So we have our team just helping to facilitate, as well as our own community health workers and research assistants who work with us all throughout the year. So what we've come up with now is that we do have a clinical and community 4-week rotation. We have the global health practicum, that's 3-week long practicum, internships that last 3 to 6 weeks, and then also gap year research assistants who stay for 6 months to a year, and really working together with communities to improve and reduce health inequities. This is funny because it's a duffel bag medicine thing. So like we see so much of this in Nicaragua. Tons of people come with their duffel bags, and people are waiting outside, waiting to be seen. And you know what? We always have to reflect critically and address whether or not that's really increasing health inequities or reducing health inequities. Is it helping the Ministry of Health to improve reaching out to the poorest people, or you know, what are we doing? So I think that this is long, hard work. It requires all of us, you know, for the long haul, pushing this out and making sure we do have health for all. Health for all has not been achieved. We had that whole slogan, health for all, for the year 2000. We haven't achieved it yet, and maybe we won't achieve it in our lifetime. But this is a picture of Notre Dame Cathedral. I don't think that the people who started building it ever saw it at the very end. So I love to quote Miles Horton. He says, if you believe you have a goal you can reach in your lifetime, then it's the wrong goal. So I think health for all is one of those goals. We need to keep on pushing towards health for all. We need to keep on having the vision. And one of the ways is helping to form future leaders who can address the complex issues of public health of today or global health of today. So we thank you so much. We hope you can join us one day in Nicaragua. And for my handouts, we have some handouts about the global health practicums and what the curriculum is like. So if you want to take one of those afterwards, feel free to do so. But thank you so much. And we're very grateful for you listening from our whole team.